Hey guys, welcome to another Crypto Sparta podcast.
We're back.
We have this is maybe the doldrums, but not really. People start to
Things
get
have been
excited.
happening. Things are happening. The market has been erratic a little bit, but recently, as of late, it's gone down. But I'd say the past 7 days, Bitcoin, Ethereum, we've seen some green candles, and so money is getting made. Bitcoin is still 22K, so it's it dipped from 23, it's went down to 21, and it's kind of 21.7. And so Bitcoin and Ethereum also is the same, where it's been hovering around 1500, 1600 to 1500.
Do you have targets, Brian?
I don't have targets right now, but the thing is that Ethereum has been leveled, but altcoins have been hitting.
Dude, I think
There are plenty of altcoins that in the last
they've been
30
knowing.
to
They've been
60
knowing.
days
Are you willing to
are
roll the dice?
100x, 100%. Even Urza, our beloved Urza, was
The AI coins,
125%.
the AI coins, but the thing is, will there be pullbacks? And this is what's scary. People say bull trap, bear
The
trap.
Fed rates are still raising rates, so it's like there's
Yeah.
no
And then
economic
ChatGPT is saying
change.
that there's going to be a recession.
Yeah, so the thing is that there's money to be made. There's still a bunch of altcoins making money.
It's
Atom,
a
L1, Arbitrum plays. There are coins that have 100% returns within the last 30 to 60 days. So even though Ethereum and Bitcoin have kind of been even level or just kind of tethering to certain range points, people are still making money in this bear market.
So there's like a chop, but some of the stuff that I wanted to discuss about during this podcast was like some of the technical aspects of trading. And there's a lot of factors that go into trading versus just do you like this or not? And so, as always, not financial advice, not legal advice,
It's a
but
strategy for sure.
the people that trade that are buying and selling often, especially in crypto, sometimes you can get eaten up by the fees. Like if you're just too finicky and you're selling and buying and tweaking out all the time, it's not really the way to do it. But if you set certain parameters, there are traders who are like, "Hey, I did a leveraged long and off of a 10% increase, things are just going up and down. But if ETH stays in the 1500 to 2000 range, then you can do leveraged longs and you can do calls and you can make money. But the weird thing about this is the idea of like volatility as well as volume. And then what these other factors really tell you about is that there are people with a lot more money than you. And so if you do a leverage, they might move the market. But if you're not degenned, if it's just crabbing where it's really not going way high or way low, but what that's why people talk about the volatility of Bitcoin, because it just goes up and
You can
down.
steal some. You can say,
If
it's
someone is like leveraged to 100%,
like the underdog can steal a game or two.
so they always talked about, was it Justin Sund?
With Tron?
Where he had a giant leveraged long on Bitcoin, and then if the bears could
Oh,
liquidate him.
he got wiped out, but there was a waiting line. So he was like 69 on the waiting line to get liquidated. And so he had that time to get himself in the clear to not get liquidated.
And so they don't just liquidate you, but the
There's
idea
a
is that
waiting line. If something's still,
you're
you're not
borrowing a lot of
waiting.
money and you're paying interest to the bank. These are the way that like these fundamental trading things happen, is that you're borrowing from someone. And then the thing is with crypto, it just gets super degen where it's like, yeah, I'm leveraging myself to the gills. And if it goes down 1%, then I lose everything that I have. Or you can provide more collateral, but if it goes up, you make a ton of money. But then all of this leverage completely distorts the real market.
But people aren't leveraging that much on there. like in making money. I think yeah, it's exactly. like people are investing in the altcoins and like finding the narrative and actually like investing in the right coins and they're making money.
If you're like bullish or bearish, but if Ethereum or Bitcoin or whatever you're gambling on, just crabs. Crab is walking sideways.
Yeah,
because so the crabs walk sideways. The bulls, just they go up. The bears, they go down. But the crabs that go sideways, to like borrow money that to believe either that it's going to go up or down, you're taking on leverage where you're borrowing from someone, and then you have to pay a percentage of the amount of money. The more that you borrow, the higher the percentage. So if you leverage yourself a lot, every day you lose a little bit of money to have the advantage of the leverage if it goes up or down, whichever side you bet. But the thing is, if it doesn't go anywhere, eventually your money disappears because it all goes into the interest of the person that lent it to you. So every day, if you're 100x leveraged, 5% disappears. And then when you don't have enough collateral, you can't keep your bet open. If Bitcoin goes up to 60,000 overnight and you're 100x leveraged, you can put $10, 100x is then, what, $10,000? And then $10,000 at 20,
100?
At 21,000, and it goes up to 60,000. So off of a $100 bet, you have $10,000 bet at $20,000. So you have a half of Bitcoin. And if Bitcoin goes up to 60,000 and you sell, then you make 30,000.
These are all
minus
in-
the. But that's if it goes up.
One-off scenarios.
Yes, but otherwise, every day, a little bit of that $100, $5 is taken out because of the daily interest.
Yeah.
To hold
operating fees.
Exactly, because you give them $100, but then they take interest on the loan that they gave you. But they'll give you $9,900 on your $100 bet. But they'll take $5, so you have 20 days for that bet to pay out, or else your money disappears and you get liquidated.
Yeah.
And then all the money that was going to perhaps buying the Bitcoin just goes to the bank. And then it used to be the idea that Sam Bankman-Fried would liquidate you.
But he's not there anymore.
He's not there anymore.
So there's a has been a little cleanse from FTX, you know, fallout. And now we have a much kind of cleaner market where, you know, you kind of got to burn the prairie to let things grow a little bit. So there's a lot of healthy growth. You know, things are a little clearer. There's less, it feels like there's less toxic in the air, definitely in the market.
So there have been some bumps up. But I'm the guy where Brian and I, we talk about first the market of crypto. But I try to come in as like a MBA grad with the idea of the macro. Will there be a larger market pullback? I think that things
the
are pretty bad around the world.
Raising rates, you know, when you have memes of egg prices being so expensive, like that's how you know things are kind of going bad around the world. Where people are joking about the price of eggs, there is like close to $10. Or like
and ChatGPT talked about the recession will come.
Yeah, February 15th. Dan, do anything now because apparently ChatGPT has been biased.
It can be jailbroken though.
Jailbroken to be unbiased based off because it's funny because ChatGPT has triggered this whole AI trend, right? And so Microsoft released their own, you know, ChatGPT version. And it literally was...
Bard had a mistake that was publicized highly.
Twitter within 24 hours.
No. You're mistaking Bard from Tay.
Well, Bard is
Microsoft. So Bard was Microsoft, and then what happened was Bard...
It got banned.
No, Bard made a mistake. Tay was Microsoft.
Oh, Tay was just spewing off racist tweets based off, you know... the internet and, you know,
so what happened,
compiling everything.
What happened was, do anything now, Dan.
Jailbreaks
ChatGPT.
Because you can
And make... then he told the truth.
Yeah, so the thing behind that is that because ChatGPT has become a little biased as far as politically. based on the programming. And so people, you're like, you're allowed to say good things about Biden, but you can't say good things about Trump or vice versa. And so, like, if you try to do one of those things, ChatGPT will, you know, produce an error. But people have jailbreaked ChatGPT to become Dan. Do anything now.
And then Dan tells the truth.
Yeah, so
but then they're saying Dan is racist. And so Tay was another AI that they unleashed onto Twitter. And within 24 hours, became very racist. And so then the thing is, when you train it on the data that is the internet,
yeah.
But then if the people that are training ChatGPT are leaning towards a certain, it's very clear that the bias is towards, yeah, Biden, transgender rights. You can't say certain things about certain types of people.
Yeah.
And so a lot of things that they deem offensive, if you give it certain prompts, it will shut down.
Provide an error. So, like, what was I going to say? So, it's, like, all these errors and then, like, yeah, it's crazy with ChatGPT. And so, that's why the deep AI play is actually Chainlink. Is because there's also, like, you got to provide the AI the data to learn. And so, you know, Chainlink is kind of the bridge that, you know, gets the real-time data to the AIs to accumulate. And then it can also weed out, like, with the oracles, which one is true, which one's false. I
think maybe sometimes hopefully we're welcoming new listeners and audience members. But, like, I like to just get back to the basics and explain to people what an oracle is. And the thing is, we've been doing this for so long that we can rehash ideas that we were talking about.
Oracles are truth-sayers based on the data, basically. That's how I interpret it as. It's like, basically, you know, give an oracle all the data and it will produce the correct outcome of it.
And
so there are contradictory ideas, it will sort out which one's the real one and which one's the false one. Hence the name Oracle.
What people always end up having to rely on in the idea of DeFi, and I think that oracles are most powerful for DeFi, is the idea that you need to have someone that's going to give you the info, and you're going to do these contracts that are smart contracts on these blockchains.
Based on the data.
Based on the data, but who's giving you the data? How can you trust it? In the real world, you ask data of fucking centralized governments or people that are in charge of the banks. They ask you, what are rates? It's also up to the Federal Reserve, unelected people. What I dream of is when DeFi really takes over, all of these things will not be handled by people who are biased and influenced by the governments or the currencies that they represent. What we need to understand is that all of these currencies, the euro, the dollar, the yuan, they are just backed by what? Trust in these governments that are managing these things through a centralized bank that actually is tied to the government in inextricable ways. China is explicit that their bank is also tied to the government. India, similarly. I was living through demonetization. In the U.S., we try to act like the Fed isn't tied to the government. The borrowing is tied to the military. All these are shit coins. Every coin, it's just up to if we decide whether or not we trust them. But then we make deals. We make loans. Hey, man, will you lend me? People don't understand that buying a house is basically a leveraged loan where will the bank give me 5-10 times how much money I have on the promise that I earn money and I'll pay them every month to buy a house? This is a leveraged loan, but people do this with crypto or with anything where can I go to the bank and ask for a loan but they end up taking interest. This is how DeFi works. Who tells the people how much money you make or how do you tell them how much you deserve? It's a credit rating by
the system, the AI, the data.
The data.
So that's why the data is self-executing, hence smart contracts. So, I mean, with the whole AI trend, you do see the DeFi ripple effects because people are seeing the need for DeFi.
Do you need bankers? They take out fees because they, give you customer service?
Transactions.
Why don't we just do everything on crypto?
Exactly.
Why don't we do everything on crypto? Why don't we do it mathematically?
Eliminate the middleman.
On the blockchain. I don't want a private company.
Yeah.
Wells Fargo, I bank with them. I'll talk shit to them to their face. Yeah. They take out too big of loans. Interest. They don't give back money if you deposit on their checking account. If I do everything in crypto, I can do things immediately. Sometimes my transfers around the world for my employees take 5 days. And then it's on a public blockchain where everybody can see instead of some opaque, obscure system.
You can audit it if you want.
It's ridiculous. I think we've gone through this, the reason for DeFi, and we're still trying to work towards the idea of Chainlink. So Chainlink, the thing is, there is an unlimited number of people that are reporting on the exact same data. And then that's what you trust.
Access to the important data too. They're making partnerships with people to exchange data.
The alternative to Chainlink or an Oracle is relying on centralized governance. And the oracles and Chainlink, the technology is
Facebook ads.
Chainlink is chef's kiss. The way that they have so many nodes and they're attack proof, it would require, I believe, multiples or an exponential factor of nodes to try to.
Disincentivizes nodes to give out false information. So if you have all these nodes reporting the right information, that's how you gather, one real truth. But if you have bad actors, but the system really incentivizes bad actors.
So the cool thing about Chainlink that we need to explain is the idea that all of these decentralized exchanges that are giving, what people need to understand is that decentralized exchanges give better deals because rather than paying out money to all the middlemen, it's just a open source system that everybody can see. What are the rates? What are the loans at? When do I get liquidated? And then the counterparties are decentralized. So everyone is lending money to everyone. When I take out a loan for my credit card company, it's fucking 22%.
APR is terrible.
When we start loaning to each other through decentralized finance, when I lend my money to the bank that holds my money, I get less than 1%?
Yeah. So in your savings account, you're getting less than 1% and they're using your money.
And then they're making 7, 20, whatever.
I couldn't close my savings account instantaneously and say, I want 15 grand in cash, basically. They're not going to close that account and give you 15 grand. There's a limit to how much you can withdraw, and there's almost so much money in the bank at one time. So dealing with banks is such a hassle, especially with large purchases, probably over $10,000, I would say.
So they're talking about the CBDCs in England, and I don't want to get too conspiratorial, but they talk about the 15-minute cities.
The CBDCs, and then also you see Visa, MasterCard testing credit card payments with crypto or crypto payments.
And I do these transfers internationally to pay my employees in India, and it takes 5 days, and I'm so upset that I can't just do crypto. But apparently it's inefficient use of capital because they get taxed 30% on any crypto, even if I transfer them dollars crypto.
Well, that's just U.S. I mean, that's USDC India law.
And USDT
that's
is
India law.
Exactly.
So they're taxed on crypto.
This is exactly my point, is that these governments are fighting this stuff.
Well, this is the good transition to our own battle in the U.S. right now, where so a lot of this depends on regulation, right? So India, there's a 30% tax. U.S., there's no, it's treated as a stock. There's limited regulation, but You know, people are pushing for more regulation, especially with the FTX, you know, collapse. And so right now, CEO of Coinbase, Brian Armstrong, has, you know, started, you know, a chain of events, you know, chain reaction of events.
He basically put the middle finger up.
Yeah. Basically leaked confidential information, you know, or basically information told in confidence not to leave, like, you know, backroom deals. Basically saying that the U.S. wants to consider staking illegal. And so, you know, that just inhibits, you know, the whole proof of stake, you know, philosophy of Ethereum. And then also staking that got, you know, DeFi very popular in the first place. Stake high APYs on, you know, lending coins, which we called staking, basically. And so if the U.S. bans staking or considers that illegal, has huge ramifications on innovation, right? Like, who, from a builder standpoint, developer standpoint, for, you know, Chainlink, for example, they rely on staking for their whole thing. Why would they want to operate in the U.S. if that's considered illegal?
Or, like, yeah, why? And then the legal challenges are extreme in the U.S., like, very high, and the taxes. And then the thing is, when it comes to crypto, like, people are going to be pushed into stuff. They talked about Netflix. Did you hear about how they were saying, we're going to crack down on people sharing passwords?
Yeah.
And then apparently, like, Pirate Bay literally
exploited it.
Well, so you want to explain Pirate Bay, but no, there, it, like, went up like 30% that day. Like, the amount of people downloading torrents. Yeah,
torrents.
And it's like, at a certain point,
they like try to change.
Don't comply. Don't tread on me.
They try to
don't
change
comply
with the IP address, but that actually, like, hurts the people actually, like, traveling and who are, like, they try to, like, source the IP to
they went
their
back
home
on it.
Address.
They went back on it.
Because, like, it doesn't work out for people who are traveling, you know, and use their account, you know, while they're traveling.
Well, the crazy thing is the idea of don't comply, where when do people get pushed to a certain extent? And, I mean, in terms of personal freedoms, I'll just have, like, a brief moment where it's just, dude, the way that they tell people, what can you do? What can you do? Should we play that?
No.
We should. No, it's funny. But no, yeah, we shouldn't. But
return in colonies. That's what basically we're referring to back in the day.
Are we allowed privacy? Are we allowed guns? Are we allowed to defend ourselves? Are we allowed to
under the influence?
What can we do with our computers?
Yeah.
What gets us in trouble? And I saw some people in England, they get in trouble for memes. If you meme about, like, the royal family.
Yeah.
Like, you can get in trouble.
That's communism,
man. It's, I mean, you know from your family. What do your family tell you about communism?
It's bad.
It's not good. It's not good.
Yeah.
It's
any not good. Immigrant family who escaped communism, Vietnamese or, you know.
Cuban. Or Cuban.
They'll say,
or
like,
Eastern European, you know, like, wherever it's.
Yeah, Serbia, they'll tell you, like, you know, U.S., you have it here. You got it made. Like, you do not want communism. Like, people who want communism live in, you know, in the suburbs in the U.S. Like, they don't know the hardship. And, you know, so the immigrants, yeah, talk to any immigrant.
Communism bad, okay? Yeah. Well, in Colombia, they see the Venezuelans fleeing Venezuela.
Yeah, inflation, and, like,
it's just really rough. And Venezuela, they had all the gas and they were rich. So it was really weird because the Venezuelans used to be like, we're rich. And then it was like communism. They're like, we're broke. And it's like, didn't you have a ton of oil? And they're like, yeah, it just got pissed away.
Yeah, we don't know where the money went. It went to some other dude. That's the thing where it's like, there's corrupt, like, communism, maybe ideologically is okay, but the thing is, human nature, people are crooks. People have self-interest.
We're gonna get into NFTs, though, and I'm making a little executive decision. We're gonna take a little halftime break. But we're going to get into NFTs.
That didn't pause it. Yeah, so NFTs, thing about, you know, we've talked about these narratives, and NFTs have actually been picking up steam. It's like they haven't gone anywhere. Like, Checks have also, like, done really well. Or, like, this new project called Checks. And just basically Twitter verification, different stickers in, like, a canvas. And, like, you know, name brands like Budweiser are, you know, tweeting back. You know, Kumpai Pandas, they've been doing big. Daniel's been super into them. And,
yeah,
it's crazy. Their floor has gone up, even though Ethereum might be level.
Well, so the crazy thing is, there's like the CEOs of these are, yeah, Luka Nets, Dorial Milkbags, are killing it. Where what I wanted to discuss was like a really intense. I have like some notes here. I'll even like show it to the people out there.
This is our outline.
Yeah, we do try to like. But I was looking at some of the graphs over here that I was drawing out, and the ideas, look, I'm just going to explain the ideas, is that the overall volume of NFTs has gone up over time, but where does the money go to? And so then there are certain, like, NFT projects that they get less love or they get more. And then are people still going? And so Doodles. Was that 34? Doodles was 34 ETH. Now they're at 5, but Pudgy Penguins are going up. The Kumpai Pandas are going up. And Checks, Jack the Butcher.
Who made Checks, yeah.
He made it so that they burn and they, like, kind of got more hype. So recently, that's where the money goes to. Overall, NFTs are down. But what we had talked about last time was that a lot of the volume was fake. So look, there's a lot of money that goes into NFTs, and there's money that goes into expensive NFTs or low priced NFTs, Checks, all these like things that are kind of, or maybe things that don't get as much attention anymore, but you want to join in. But what's hot? And the hot ball of money went into Checks. The Pudgy Penguins are moving up. The Doodles are going down. Azuki, CloneX. There's a lot of these things. Also, Moonbirds. There's a whole ecosystem. And what I wanted to explain is the idea of liquidity, where when you chart things in NFTs, these are all like individual pieces of art, technically. Every token is its own thing. So it's not as liquid, whereas you say like a coin, where there's thousands of it, and then there's a stable price. People list stuff on OpenSea. And overall, things are kind of down in general, but certain NFTs go up. But everything NFT is priced in ETH. So if ETH goes up, and you go up in terms of ETH as your NFT price, that's huge. So it's interesting to chart how these different NFTs work, because the ETH price going up is bullish for NFTs because everything is priced in ETH, typically. When volume goes up, it benefits the people that take the fees, like OpenSea, as well as like the initial.
Well, that was the thing with OpenSea too, with the whitewashing, where it's like they fake their users because it's just one person with 10 different wallets trading within themselves. So it made it look like they had so many users, but, you know, they really didn't have the unique users, or like the tracking to track, you know, unique users was limited. And so OpenSea is kind of like gotten a bad rap, but it's also the only one where you can buy or like
what I was telling Brian was that we're like really deep into the crypto stuff, and people bitch about OpenSea, but the average person, it's the by far largest and most accessible way to get NFTs.
Like, it takes a while.
So OpenSea is still
and looks rare, even though maybe that might be better.
And but no, now it's Blur, and now it's something else and something else. But once you start kind of doing market dominance or market percentages, you realize that like everything goes through OpenSea at least half, unless you're really smart. But it makes it confusing how you can like kind of transfer stuff in between.
I bet all celebrities that they want to buy NFTs, they use.
Well, most of them don't care, and then,
or maybe it's backroom deals where it's
so,
like, oh,
this was the point that I wanted to explain, was that Brian and I were discussing the NFT market, and is Bored Apes like a solid? I don't think so. I don't think that Bored Apes.
Same with Pudgy Penguins, they're doing the IP. They're pivoting from NFTs. NFTs.
Will they keep going up or will they go down? But they soared pretty high. I mean, a Pudgy Penguin for 5.2 ETH, that's about, when you factor in the price of ETH, what is that? 14,000?
It doesn't matter for the NFTs. Like, they're profiting in real world right now, where they're using IP to, you know, sell storybooks. You know, they're using dollars. Like, they're creating theme parks. They're creating merch. Like, people are not paying an NFT, or like, they're not using their.
So, shout out Compact Pandas. Dude, we got 3 tickets to Pandemonium. Yeah,
exactly. They triggered these events.
These NFT projects are starting to get like serious businesses. I think that slowly the steel sharpens steel. You cannot just launch a shitty NFT project without actually having something behind it. And some sort of seriousness, some sort of feeling like a real business.
Some legitimacy.
Like a proper investment.
Legitimacy.
And the things that aren't...
Compact Pandas, like... Do you think John Jones investing? Like, that was...
And John Jones getting in, Roy Jones Jr. Shout out Milkbags. And Sana India team, like, clip that and tag them.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
Big Compact Pandas people.
Sure. Yeah, big time. I know, I mean, we saw what I was going to explain to Brian, because he wasn't as informed about it, but the Moonbirds were super expensive. Ryan Carson is doing, like, people say it's a cash grab. I don't know. Maybe it's not. Maybe he has a good thesis, but he's asking for rich people to donate lots of money. Not donate. To invest into a fund. And the idea of investment into this guy who's, like, a bit of a cash grabber. Which NFT projects have legitimacy? Which ones disappear? Which ones are going to survive? Which ones keep building? Kanpai and Pudgy Penguins are still going. I think that slowly, Yuga, I don't know. I guess they have historical, and now it's like almost a legacy thing. But I think the Bored Apes might still go down relative to the idea of a penguin going up. What is still going on? Are people going to get bored with the Bored Apes?
They're worried about the price of Bored Ape Yacht Club. Like, they're too focused building, like...
They're moving into games. They're moving into
games. Yeah, exactly. Building movies, TV. You know, same with Pudgy Penguins, how they hired...
The Disney writers.
The Disney writers to create stories. You know, they're using as a cartoon, or, you know, creating IP... creating content off of their original NFTs. Like, they could care. I think right now, higher the better, but right now they could care less about, you know, the price of the NFT right now.
I agree with you, and I think they're all long-term hodlers.
Yeah.
I just think, so this is my point about the Compact Pandas outperforming.
They're kind of the next ones to create the IP, you know, create something.
And then some of the stuff that used to be OG or blue chip, quote unquote blue chip, Azuki's, Clonex, all this stuff, Doodles are falling because it's not genuine. But what I was trying to explain is that the Compact Pandas have the clout because they have the real OG crypto people in them.
But what was John Jones like? Why was he like, yo, I want to get into Compact Pandas? Like,
I mean, Milkbags. It's all about Milkbags.
Was he like, you know, I'll give you a bag, or like, was he like trying to convince?
I assume it's like a half mil at least. So I think that, yeah.
But why just, John Bones? Like, he hasn't found three.
Well,
days.
So the way that it works is, I believe that
like
Milk Bags has gotten in by just spending his own money. But the thing is, it's so about investment, where there's like a certain point where if you overinvest, you end up winning. Like, you have to invest more than you expect to make a successful business. And if he has the people that he has now, it's like so hyped up, you end up winning. And it's not actually about, that's why, you know, Pfizer, a lot of the people that are in the pharmaceutical industry, they spend 30% of the money, of the profits, on having hot blonde chicks.
Yeah.
Sell to doctors and to dentists.
Pharmaceutical sales. That used to be the job for hot chicks.
Little Dirty Secret.
That was in How I Met Your Mother, that episode.
Yeah, Little Dirty Secret. That's what happens there. But, you know, let's just move to the shills. Let's just chill it out and close this up.
Like, I know we've been a big proponent of Chainlink. I mean, we talked about the AI potential in Chainlink. But for me, I have a more personal story. I'm all good on Rolexes right now. Store of value right now. I put my name down for a Rolex, a couple Rolexes, trying to move. Because right now, crypto is still reliant on economic, you know, narratives, as we have seen with ChatGPT, AI, and also the, you know, macro stuff. And so I just, like, right now there's no macro event that's pushing crypto right now. So right now, you know, store of value instead of cash, you know, with inflation, like gold, jewelry. I'm kind of leaning towards that right now until, you know, the macro kind of looks better.
Yeah, and I mean, risk level. NFTs, because NFTs are basically leveraged.
It's just ETH. It's basically ETH.
But leveraged up because you think it's going to outperform ETH, but it is ETH.
It is leveraged ETH. That is one way to think about it.
But what the other thing I would say is like Phantom. Yeah, I feel like Phantom is just... I used to shill a lot.
Yeah. So right now it's really
pretty
hard.
Pretty safe. It's like I'm positive. Maybe you won't outperform, but like it just is a safe...
To really ride that like... You know, like that really non or very obscure, like altcoin, you know, like diamond in the rough. It's really hard.
Don't get married to your bags.
Yeah. It's really hard to. So it's like you could play this AI narrative. You could play this, like, you know, right? I mean, for the average.
Phantom's been there. It's pretty soft.
So it's like, yeah, minus.
And I mean, it's like another L1 play. You could do AVAX Soul. Soul isn't a bad play. You could do Soul.
So
AVAX.
It basically
Arbitrum Optimism, whatever. Whatever is your L1 of fancy. It's like a little bit of a leveraged play.
Yeah, I'm not claiming to be, you know, the expert where I can just play these AI plays and
you gotta look deep down into like what actually is like gonna be like the technical,
you know,
what chain is gonna really develop the best technology.
So it's all about the macro and if you want to go into NFTs, that's like Daniel says, a leveraged version of Ethereum, because you basically have to buy the...
And I gave some advice, but otherwise, like, you should really know, should be tracking these NFTs and the communities.
Yeah, that's
and,
the
like,
thing, where it's like, you got to start...
Kind of know the community is like really deep, be deep.
We've talked
Don't
about
just,
this
like,
before, too. Like, you got to start thinking in ETH instead of dollars, where it's like, right now, the value of ETH right now is low. From 3,000 to, you know, 1,300, 1,500. But, you know, the value of ETH, you know, has increased on these NFTs. Like, have gone from 1.5 at the height of the bull market to, like, you know, 3. So it's like, even though the dollar amount is less because ETH is less, like, if you're really a true believer of, you know, crypto, you want to think of ETH. And so,
then do you want to gamble on top of altcoins, yeah, or do you want to just get into ETH, or do you want to do Bitcoin?
Yeah, it's a double gamble.
If you believe in crypto, you can just buy Bitcoin.
You can just buy NFT with your.
Or you could go super degen and get like the Bitcoin ordinal alt where someone is like spoofing it.
Yes.
Like you can like gamble on like the alternate of the Bored Ape Yacht Club of Bitcoin of Bored Apes being like
the next.
There's tolerances of risk is what I'm trying to tell people.
I mean, no investment is safe, obviously.
Yeah.
Like people say low risks, but there's always some risks. Things can go wrong. So what's your show then?
Yeah, I mean, it still is the Kanpai Pandas. It really is. And then
NFTs, leveraged ETH.
Because that's where I have my edge, and I believe that I believe in the cool kids table. And that's what I think that the Kanpai Pandas represents, is that it's like where the people in crypto
next one
that
up.
Really are about it. The thing is, what I was telling Brian was the Bored Apes, it's like there's all these rich people that don't care about NFTs that bought them for clout.
Yeah.
I think Bored Apes are gonna go down. Pudgy Penguins, I think, will go up. I still like Pudgy Penguins, but I think Kanpai Pandas is an even more leveraged bet. I'm betting on crypto going up and then people moving their profits into pandas.
And that's the whole thing. Kanpai is being the next NFT to go up.
I'm betting on the people that like Kanpai Pandas. The thing is, you have to understand the idea of NFTs is the community. So I want to bet on the Kanpai Panda community, because the Kanpai Panda community is a crypto community. So if crypto goes up, I think people will pull their liquidity from their gains into Kanpai Pandas. And so where is the hot ball of money moving from? It used to be the L1 trade. It's like DeFi summer. There's Chainlink when the bear market was like years ago. There's all sorts of stories. And I think that the flow into Kanpai Pandas will happen sooner than later.
Yeah. So there you have it.
On that note.
That was a pretty good justification. I'd take that from a quality perspective. That was quality. So on that note, we'll end. It's been a long, broken. This episode's kind of been broken too. But hopefully we can fix that and hit by Sana and any team to do that. But thank you for listening to the latest episode of the Crypto Spartan Podcast.